In your mind, you have capacities, you know, to telepath messages through the vast unknown. Please close your eyes and concentrate with every thought you think upon the recitation we're about to sing. Of interplanetary craft, calling occupants of interplanetary most extraordinary craft, calling occupants of interplanetary craft.
So much for joining us today. This is Padani and Russell Investigates the Ray Weir Files. I am, of course, Melissa Padani from Oral Stimulation, and I am joined by Wyme Russell.
Hello. How's it going?
It is going good. We are going to get weird in here today.
All right. Yes.
I'm very excited. We are talking with Ray Weir, former CIA agent, healthcare worker, and he's really all around a pretty intelligent guy. He's devoted his life to debunking government myths and cover-ups. Throughout this talk today, he'll be discussing his thoughts on alien encounters, whether they're visiting and implanting people of the planet, a massive clean energy cover-up, whether doctors are doing all they can to cure cancer patients, and some of the most mind-blowing technology that actually sounds like science fiction but exists in very real form today. He's also going to be sharing with us his ties to some of the most shocking conspiracy theories and whether there's anything that we can be doing to protect ourselves and our families. So it's going to be a great afternoon.
Very good. We're having a beautiful day here in Los Angeles. I'd like to say that.
Definitely. It's wonderful.
Broadcasting live here on SkidRowStudios.com. We appreciate that. And Mr. Hansen manning the gears, and he's doing a great job. How are you today?
Guys.
How you doing? Thank you for joining us on our fantastic show here on aliens and abductions and all those things that we're going to try to cover with Mr. Weir today. I believe we have Mr. Weir on the line. Can we bring him on? Ray, are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good today. It's a beautiful day here as well.
Excellent. And where are you, Ray?
I'm in Ohio right now.
Excellent. So we're having a beautiful day in Ohio. We are here in Los Angeles, ready to go over some amazing information with you today. So why don't you give us a brief introduction of who you are, your background, and then we'll get into some of this this hot information. Hello? I think he might have dropped. That's no problem. He will certainly be right back. But Mr. Weir is a known CIA person, is he not, Melissa?
He is, yes. He actually contacted me a while ago, and we've been going back and forth on all kinds of information.
Wow.
So
not secret stuff where they're going to have to track you down. Or
you never know.
Okay. Well, that's good.
I don't know. I personally am a little skeptical of the government. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say that. I assume at this point in our time, okay, we're always being followed. We're always being watched.
Sure.
You're not getting away with anything.
That's right. No, we're not. And let me ask you a question about that. How do you feel, or do you trust the way our government handles information about aliens or about UFOs? Do you think they're telling us the truth?
No. I really don't.
Hello?
Oh, Ray, hey, are you
Ray,
back?
There you are. You dropped, no problem. You're back. Ray, why don't you just tell us who you are, give us a little of your background, and then we'll get into this this shattering information that you have for us.
Okay, well, most of my family and friends have known me most of my career as a registered nurse. I was actually recruited into the CIA at the end of my RN-BSN nursing program and right before I started grad school. It really began with, they take applications actually for the CIA on major college campuses. They tend to focus on the University of Washington, the University of California, all of those schools, Texas A&M, and Ohio State.
Okay. And what time frame was this, Ray?
Well, when I actually applied, this would have been the fall of 1998. There was an ad in the student paper at Ohio State, The Lantern, that they were taking applications at the Ohio Union, and I went and filled out an application.
No kidding. And it said CIA on it? I mean, you actually
You knew what you were getting into?
Yeah. I mean, it was advertised. It was no secret. You went and filled out an application, and that was pretty much it. What really got me in, and actually they had been watching me before this time frame, and I'll get into that in a second, but what really got me in was my GRE score, the graduate record exam. I scored a near-perfect score, and that's really what brought them out of the woodwork. And but I had found out later, when they were kind of interviewing me and bringing me in, that I took a test that I think all high schoolers take. It's called the ASVAB.
Right.
It's a military aptitude test that you take in high school.
Okay.
And on that, I had scored in the 99th percentile. And they had kind of been keeping an eye on me since then and what I was up to, what I was doing.
Did you know that at the time, or did you get
Not
that information afterwards?
And they had originally come to talk to me about flying actually like single-seat fighter jets. Someone from the Navy first came. I'm kind of short in stature. I'm 5'6" and a half, so I could fit in the cockpit. I had 20/15 vision, which is better than 20/20, and I was intelligent. So it was first someone from the Navy, and I kind of killed that real quick. I told them I was terrified of heights, and they kind of backed off on that.
Okay. Hey, sorry. Let me stop you. So let me let's try to grab a hold of this, and let me ask you a question. So you were an exceptional high school student. You did well on the ASFAB. Were you interested in military issues or politics or anything while you were in high school that would have driven you to a job in the intelligence world, or were you just somebody who was intelligent and had the aptitude to score high on these tests and then was noticed at that point? Or was it something that you strive for, as you kind of grew up? Was this always your interest? And it was,
not
was it
really.
Something
I mean,
you wanted
I
like to become?
James Bond movies, and that was about it. I had no plans of going into the military or intelligence work. Basically, I was trying to decide what I was going to do for grad school. I didn't really think that I wanted to be a nurse, and I was about done with my nursing degree.
Okay. So you did well in high school, and then you went on to college. Where you did go to college?
Yeah, the Ohio State University.
Okay.
And I did pretty well in nursing school, too. I believe I finished second in my class.
Excellent.
In that program.
So you went to college. Now, did you study intelligentsia or the military or our government in college, or was it pretty much just the medical nursing stuff?
It was just medical nursing. I had no plans, really. And when I went and filled out the application for the CIA, I was kind of trying to figure out what I was. That was just kind of something to do for fun, interesting, go fill it out and see what happens.
Oh, so you were actually just out and about and saw this or heard of this application and went ahead and tried to apply for it, huh?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what happened. I had... Actually, the day I went and filled out the application, I had a form and the check and everything written for the, I think it's called the LSAT, the law entrance exam. And the last second, I was just getting ready to put it in the mailbox, and I decided I don't want to be a lawyer. I hate reading, boring books and all that stuff. So
you have taken more.
Kind of ditched that idea and filled out the application.
You've taken more tests in your life than I have ever taken. You've probably taken more tests to get into school than I've ever taken in my whole life, Ray.
Yeah, it sounds like you were really
Holy
all
cow.
Over the place with your interests there.
So you
I was good at taking tests. There's no doubt about that.
So you took the ASVAB, and you said in high school or in college, was the government interested in you from these test scores? When did that interest take place?
That I took the ASVAB. It was either junior or sophomore year in high school. So long ago, I'm not sure exactly what year it was, but it was before my senior year.
And you said there was interest from the government while you were still in high school as a result of that 99% score, correct?
That's correct. I didn't know that at the time. Wow. You know, later when I started talking to them, when they were recruiting me, after I filled out the application, they let me know that they had piqued an interest in me even back then.
What exactly were they doing? I mean, how were they watching you as a high school student?
Well, I don't think they sent people to my high school. It was out in the middle of nowhere. I think what they meant by that is they were just watching where I went to college, how I did in school, that sort of stuff.
Very interesting. And did they ever contact you? You're saying they never contacted you until you actually went ahead and tried to put in this CIA application, correct?
Correct. I did the application, I think it was in the fall of 98, and they came around in the spring of 1999, right about the time that I got my GRE score back and found out that I was accepted into the Masters of Healthcare Administration program at Ohio State University.
And very had good. You planned to go in that direction just because that was the way you were headed?
Yeah, you know, I just I wasn't sure that I wanted to be a nurse, and I wanted to have options open for later in my career so that, you know, maybe I could move up. But as I got into nursing, I realized that being a healthcare administrator is even worse, and I wanted no part of that. So,
hey, Ray, this is always a very personal question for people in the medical field and the studies in which you've studied. Why did you not take the extra step to become a physician or doctor? Certainly not limiting the nursing profession. I certainly respect that. But why didn't you take the next step and actually become a physician or doctor or, you know, something of that nature?
Sure. I probably could have gotten into med school with my grades, but I honestly had no interest. Through nursing school, I had seen that I'd seen the life of a medical resident, and it's not glamorous. And for that matter, I don't believe being a doctor anymore is that glamorous. I mean, you don't really have control of your own life. If you have patients in the hospital, it's a 24/7 job, and I wanted no part of that.
True. Yeah, I've seen the I've worked in a hospital for many years. I spent many years in a veterans hospital, actually, doing work in their radiology department. And, you know, watching those doctors, how they have to, you know, go through all of their schooling or whatever it's all called, all the jargon kind of, you know.
All the training.
Escapes me now. But, boy, was that must have been of a hard thing for them to accomplish. So I certainly respect that. So you were a nurse, and you got involved with the CIA. Now pick us up there and tell us what happened at that point. Where did you go? Did you start to train? I mean, where did they send you, if you can give us any of that information?
I can. I trained at the Battelle Memorial Institute Strategic Military Compound. And there's not a whole lot of people on this earth that know where that's at. It is on the campus of Ohio State University, as opposed to off campus at Battelle, which is just a little off campus on King Avenue.
When you say Battelle, can you spell that?
Battelle is BATTELLE.
Got it. Thank you. Very good. Okay, and so now are these organizations marked on the campus, or is it something that's just kind of in an office, kind of hidden away, and they give you a call and you kind of show up, you know, knock on the door?
It's funny you ask that. It's the only building on Ohio State's campus that does not have a door. Basically, when I was first told to go there, I walked up to the building, walked around it a few times. There was no door, and
no this, kidding.
There's very thin windows on it. And the window, one of these windows and like the bricks with it popped out, and it's basically a hidden door, and someone came and got me. But
wow.
I have the feeling if you walk around that building a few times, they know everything about you before you even get in there.
Very interesting. And now this is now. So take us to the moment where you're actually accepted into the CIA. How exciting is that for a young person, you know, somebody who is as bright as you are, with all of those possibilities out there, because we all know if we've studied the CIA or our government, we all know our, you know, the potential of a job in that organization. Were you excited to take us to the point to where you were accepted? Now you're in these training programs here at Battelle. All, you know, the places that you've mentioned, you're going through secret doors. I mean, this has to be exciting for a young kid. I mean, how old were you at this point?
Oh, I was 22 at the time, and it was exciting. But they really mess with you when they bring you in. They kind of test you out first.
Is it like fraternity initiation?
Kind of.
I bet it's worse.
Really, just seeing how you react to people, how you talk to people. They would send people up to me in everyday situations, and we would have conversations, which was kind of odd. It happened a few times, and I was like, wow, that was a weird conversation out of nowhere. But, you know, you talk to these people, and then kind of some of them at the end would let me kind of know towards the end, the last few I'd talked to, they would mention things about me that only I would know.
Wow.
And just kind of like drop hints that there's people watching me and they're interested in me. And that was very strange. But
so they would approach you and tell you things about your life that you never told them?
Yeah, not directly.
Wow.
Not like, you know, they knew what shows I watched. They knew who I hung out with.
So it's like they were in your apartment with you. I mean, they were watching you that closely.
Yeah. Yeah,
wow.
Some of the things that they knew, they could only be as someone in my... I lived with five people for a few years. You know, I was kind of had the party house. And
you didn't run
that.
At that point?
I did stand-up in college, and they had been to one of my stand-up performances. They were... One of them told me one of my own jokes. Just little things like that they let me know that they were watching me.
Yeah, I'd like to also add that... Ray is also an aspiring stand-up comedian, so that is also another one of his endeavors. I mean, this guy, you know, you're certainly adventurous and you're willing to try lots of things. I really respect that. So you're in the CIA. You're a CIA man now. You've gone through your training. And what is your first assignment, or what is the average job for somebody in the CIA? So say if my daughter wanted to become one of these CIA people, and she asked me, well, Dad, what do they do? What do I tell her? So what's your first assignment? What's day one at the CIA?
I was in the PsyOps division. So one of the things I was really trained for at Battelle was making psychological profiles, talking to people, trying to figure out their wants, needs, fears, you know, basically everything about them that makes them tick. And the first assignment I was sent for from Battelle was down to, the headquarters was MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa, Florida, and this was about July of 2001. I had trained for 2 years as I went to grad school from 1999 to 2001 at Ohio State and Battelle. And my first assignment was actually being pretty much eyes and ears on Bubba the Love Sponge, the radio disc jockey down in Tampa, Florida.
No kidding.
And his listeners,
wait.
Called the Bubba Army.
Wait a minute. So Bubba the Love Sponge, who we all know was on Sirius Radio with Howard Stern for many years, and of course he had a career long before that, but he came to my attention, you know, on Sirius Radio. Now you're telling me the Bubba the Love Sponge that I love and listen to, you had a job to what? To follow him or to track him?
Well, first, were you alone on this? Was it like a one-on-one thing, or was there a whole team assigned to him?
It had to be a team for Bubba.
There was more than me, but I wasn't aware of the other people that were watching him. Basically,
were they aware
I was
of you?
On my own, and I had help, but I didn't know who the help was.
So
my job in that function was basically to... I listened to a show every day, which was part of my job, and I was working nights as a nurse, which was my cover at the time, and I worked with Bubba the Love Sponge's ex-girlfriend. Her name was Holly, and he had been with her for quite a few years, and basically they sent me wherever she went. I was in a float pool for a system called Baycare Health System down there in Tampa, And I usually went to either Meese Dunedin Hospital or Meese Countryside because that's where Holly usually worked. And they tried to keep me around her and talk to her and get as much information as I could about Bubba and his listeners.
Were you aware that you were being sent around with her? Were you watching her as well?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So you were sent...
Yeah, we kind of became friends. You know, I was like a work friend to her, and I didn't make it too obvious. I didn't dwell, and, you know, everything we talked about was Bubba, but I tried to bring it up when I could, or she did.
So well, she didn't know.
What was the motivation to track Bubba or to investigate Bubba? Why was the CIA interested in Bubba the Love Sponge or Todd Clem?
Yeah, he wasn't considered a national security threat. It wasn't that serious, but the problem was it all started with a thing that he calls the hog incident or the hog deal. He butchered a hog live on the air in February of 2001, and I showed up a few months after that, and it was a big deal locally. The trial was national. It was on Court TV, and Bubba's listeners are called the Bubba Army, and it's a rambunctious group, lots of gun owners, and they were making threats to the district attorney, and I had to go to all of Bubba's live events and kind of scope the crowd, talk to the crowd, see if I thought anybody was dangerous, that sort of thing.
I'm jealous of that job, Ray. That sounds like one of the most amazing jobs you could ever have.
But just to clarify, he did not actually slaughter the hog on air, correct?
It was They did slaughter the hog.
Claims. I wasn't there. I didn't see it personally.
The story goes, they did slaughter a hog on the air, and they barbecued it. So they slaughtered it, and they ate it. But they had an actual, a person who slaughters them professionally actually slaughter it.
Oh, and it was just the sound effects that got him in trouble because it was over the top.
That's right. They killed the hog, but they played these bizarre sound effects over the killing, and then that.
Right. They made it sound like they were torturing the hog, basically. So, but those sound effects were fake. But that's what got him into trouble. He was actually incarcerated, him and his producer, Brent, for like 4 days, I believe, before they even got out.
For sound effects?
So that got the our government interested in a radio DJ. An event like that would take our government power or time or tax money, and they would send somebody like you out to investigate a DJ because he killed a hog. Now, give me the importance of that based on like terrorism or things like that. What was their rationale for doing something like that? I mean, what was their intended outcome?
Well, I believe you're exactly right. It was an overreaction. But the thing you have to understand about Bubba the Love Sponge, especially in Tampa, is that 50 to 60% of people listening to radio in the morning are listening to Bubba's show. He may be the most popular DJ in any one city in the entire country. I mean, over half the people listening to radio in the morning are listening to Bubba. So he does have a lot of influence and a lot of power in Tampa locally. There's no question about that. And I believe the fact that, you know, he calls his listeners the Bubba Army. He would, you know, make callers sergeants and lieutenants and things like that on the air. And some of the listeners, I think, were carrying that moniker a little too far, and they were just, we wanted to keep an eye on them, make sure nothing serious was going to happen. Like I said, the DA was getting death threats, the courtroom was getting bomb threats, stuff like that. That's what put them on the radar.
Hey, Ray, let me ask you a sidebar. Have you ever had to track any rappers or any people in the hip-hop industry?
No. I've been asked to spy on religious people, but that's about it.
And after Bubba and after all of that happens down in Clearwater, what was the next move for Ray Weir and the CIA?
Well, not long after that, 9/11 happened, and that pretty much shook up everything. And we began, planning for the Gulf invasion and psychological operations for the Gulf invasion. And I'm not going to go into a whole lot of details on that. That's, I want to make clear, I don't have an antagonistic relationship with the CIA, NSA, or any other spy agency. I support them. We need those guys. But, you know, I just believe there's some information that they have that should be released to the public, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay. And you mentioned
one thing that there has been press on that I feel it's okay to mention because it has been talked about in the press is battlefield holograms. And at one point in the PSYOPs division down there in Tampa, we did actually have a conversation about using a giant hologram of, like, the return of Allah in the sky to get the Iraqis to throw down their weapons and, you know, kind of just start praying instead of fighting.
Okay, so you're saying that the CIA had some sort of development or technology that can create huge illusions or holograms on a battlefield that would make people give up?
Well, they've also got the voice of Allah, which kind of follows along with that, where it will target one specific person.
Wow.
And only that person will be able to hear the voice that tells them to surrender or run.
And this is some sort of technology that we have.
Yeah, and
wow.
It creates chaos on the battlefield.
Interesting. Very interesting. And now, Ray, you mentioned 9/11. Now, you mentioned that your investigations were interrupted by 9/11. Now, of course, I have very deep personal feelings about 9/11, and I feel that the government was certainly involved in at least a cover-up of, you know, having potential information that could have stopped the attack. And basically that's what you kind of just said, was that our government does withhold a lot of information. And on 9/11 particularly, I feel that they certainly had enough information to at least stop the attack if they didn't have their hand in it, firsthand. Now, that's just my personal opinion. But, Ray, where do you stand on 9/11, our government's involvement at 9/11? Do you have any, of course you can't give out any inside information, but did you investigate it? Where were you sent after 9/11? And how did the CIA treat its younger investigators once 9/11 occurred?
I had no hand at all in investigating what happened on 9/11. That was for people that had been there a little longer, a little more experienced. I was kind of the new guy. I was mostly focused on, at that point, psychological operations and things that we could do going into Iraq. My personal feeling on 9/11 is I don't know. I think there's a lot of information that the government didn't release. I do think we have found the flight recorders, for instance, for at least three black boxes of the planes. I'm pretty sure that's a fact. And
that is correct. The two black boxes were found at World Trade Center 1 and 2 at Ground Zero, and there were no black boxes found at the Pentagon, allegedly, but we do have the flight data recorder information. So everything is sketchy in the 9/11 investigation world. But you have to look at it all. You can't say, okay, they told us the truth about 9/11, but they're not going to tell us the truth about anything else. You know, they're telling us everything on the up and up about 9/11, yet they're not going to disclose information about aliens or UFO technology. So, it all kind of goes hand in hand, and I'm sure you kind of agree with that, without, committing one side or another on 9/11. But let's move forward. Once 9/11 happened, you were in some sort of laboratory work. So you kind of describe yourself in this PSYOP program, or in a location where you weren't in direct investigation with 9/11. I'm sure everybody was pretty much moved to something based on terrorism or gearing up for war. I know they send you guys out all over the world, give us the next step, or tell us, what is a PSYOP program? What do you do there? Where is it, if you can give us that information? How many people are involved? I mean, this is all stuff that I've always wanted to ask, a government guy like yourself. Tell us about your PSYOP program.
Well, pretty much everything that we did for PSYOPs, it all took place, in a facility adjacent to CENTCOM, which was on MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa.
Okay.
Now, as far as everything that we did there, I'm not going to go into a lot of that. Everybody's heard of dropping flyers, dropping food, things of that nature. That's the obvious stuff.
That's where you would go in and literally drop flyers that have information on them, right? Propaganda paperwork. Am I right?
Right. I mean, I wasn't on the flights that dropped them. Those were Air Force guys, but I was involved in crafting those messages, writing those messages, that sort of thing.
I've seen them do it. They push huge pallets of documents out of the back of airplanes.
The Iraqi people.
They would come down like rain, and they would actually pick these up and read them. And it was a message, and they were, you know, propagandized messages telling them that America is great or whatever. You're not being invaded. You're being helped along those lines. Absolutely.
That was pretty much the main message.
Does that work, Ray? Is that a popular technique in the government, the CIA? Is that a way to spread the propaganda, you know, person by person?
It must work because they still do it. So they must be getting some bang for their buck out of it, or they wouldn't continue to do it.
All right. Very interesting, man. And so PSYOPs, okay? Now, I know that you are a big... actually, you know what? Let me ask you a question. But before we move on to PSYOPs or, you know, remote viewing, and I know we got to get to remote viewing because that is some very, interesting information there. I want to ask you a question about our current president, Ray. And I don't know your political affiliation, but I do want to touch a little ground here. Now, do you support our president in the vein of disclosing private information or, pardon me, public information or private information that should be public? Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Do you feel that our government is now transparent as Obama promised on the campaign trail? Are they giving us the information we need?
I don't think he is as transparent as he promised he would be, but that's been the case with almost every president that's ever been in office. You know, there's always big promises and things change once they're in there.
Right.
And, you know, Jimmy Carter promised he was going to try to bring out the UFO stuff to the public. And he actually did make an effort to do that. And it was nixed. It was quelled. He was stopped.
By who?
So the president doesn't always control what information gets out to the public. We like to think of him as a commander in chief, but there are people in the shadows that have more information in him and control that information.
Right. I believe he was very untruthful on the campaign trail. I do have a clip of President Obama, since this show is on disclosure and releasing information that is not, public to us. Let's hear Obama's opinion on disclosing information and what he promised us his administration would be a part of. Let's listen to President Obama.
The directives I am giving my administration today on how to interpret the Freedom of Information Act will do just that. For a long time now, there's been too much secrecy in this city. The old rules said that if there was a defensible argument for not disclosing something to the American people, then it should not be disclosed. That era is now over. Starting today, every agency and department should know that this administration stands on the side not of those who seek to withhold information, but those who seek to make it known.
It was a wonderful trip over here. We took the helicopter. We had landed in Roswell. I announced to people when I landed that I'd come in peace. But let me tell you, there are more 9- and 10-year-old boys around the country when I meet them. They ask me, have you been to Roswell? And is it true what they say? And I tell them, if I told you, I'd have to kill you. So, and their eyes get all big. You know, so we're going to keep our secrets here.
And I love that. That's Obama, of course, commenting in Roswell about aliens particularly. And I think that's a very, you know, a fun quote from Obama there. But so there you go. He certainly promised to give us, disclose all this information and be the most transparent government we have had. But to this point, Ray, I don't see any of that information coming forward. They're certainly not giving us any information on alien life, right? UFOs.
Well, Freedom of Information Act requests, I believe, lately have been honored on a more regular basis. The FBI put up they call it the Vault on their site. They have they've disclosed some of their documents related to all of these topics: ESP, aliens, Roswell. So it's gotten a little better, but some people who write a lot of Freedom of Information Act requests are the usual thing that you get back, if they have something they don't want to give you, is they just tell you that they can't find it or it's missing. And you do still hear that a lot.
Right. You're right about that. More of those requests are ignored or just denied than actually, you know, they send out information for. But so let's move this to the discussion to remote viewing, which is a very interesting topic for me. Remote viewing. Ray, tell us what you know about remote viewing. I do have a brief definition, but what do you know about remote viewing?
Well, they had a program called the Stargate Project, and there weren't a lot of people in the project. It was run by Major General Albert Stubblebine, Ed Dames, who's a popular remote viewer right now, was in it, Joseph McMonagall, Paul Smith, and a few others. Ingo Swann was probably the best that they ever had, and he wrote a book called Penetration, The Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy. And it's a very rare book because the National Security Agency kept publishers from publishing it and pretty much shut down his presses. So there's not a lot of copies of it. You can find it on Amazon, but it's about $400 or $500.
And who actually wrote that book? You said the book Penetration. Who wrote that?
Ingo Swann. He's one of the people in the Stargate Project.
I've heard if anyone actually buys that book, you can pretty much be guaranteed that you're going to be followed. You're going to be trailed. People are watching you.
Well, they're going to track you somehow with your library card, with your credit card, what you buy. But anyway, so Ray, so you're saying that you actually participated in the program with Major Ed Dames, is that correct? Or did I hear you correctly, or was that the program he started?
That was closed down. The Stargate Project, if you look it up on like Wikipedia or something like that, it says it was closed in 1995 and disbanded, and it was. But okay. What always happens with programs like this is that they are moved into these basically what I call dummy corporations like Battelle and like Science Application International Corporation out in San Diego. When they move them to these private research companies, there's absolutely no obligation to disclose what they're doing to the public. And these are basically companies that are set up by the government, and they're basically private companies, but all of their money comes from government research dollars. It's basically like the government is paying this private research firm to do research for them.
Okay.
And they're able to mask these programs that way. And remote viewing, I believe, till this day, is probably still going on. I was involved with it in 2008 at Science Application International Corporation in San Diego.
Okay, so all right, so let's kind of get back on track with the timeline of everything, Ray. So you were in this PSYOP program, and you were you said it was at the Ohio State campus, correct?
That's where I trained.
Or McDill, pardon me. You said it was at McDill. That is correct. And so you were in the PSYOP program. Now, were you part of that remote viewing program? So did you actually witness this remote viewing? Did you do it yourself? I mean, were you able to
have you been trained in
accomplish
it?
That?
I was trained in it, but I'm terrible at it. It's something that anyone can be trained to do, like playing basketball or bowling, and some people are just better at it than others.
Okay. Well, in case the listeners don't know what I'm talking about, remote viewing is this. I have a definition from www.irva.org. That's the International Remote Viewing Association. And if you don't know what it is, please go to this website because there is a lot of great information there. But their definition goes as follows. So remote viewing is a mental faculty that allows a perceiver, a viewer, to describe or give details about a target that is inaccessible to normal senses due to distance, time, or shielding. For example, a viewer might be asked to describe a location on the other side of the world which he or she has never visited. Or a viewer might describe an event that had happened long ago, or describe an object sealed in a container or in a locked room, or perhaps even describe a person or an activity all without being told anything about the target, not even its name or designation. So that would be a definition of remote viewing. Ray, your comments on that? I mean, is that pretty much what it is? How do these people have this ability, and can we all learn how to do it?
Well, you've described everything in current time or in the past. They also focus on the future as well.
They look into the predictions, right?
The future, you could look into the past and the present, all different locations. It's all possible. And Ingo Swann pretty much invented coordinate remote viewing, which was, you're given certain coordinates and you're just told what to see what's there. And they basically, it's almost like a meditation. You quiet your mind, you enter kind of a hypnotic state, and, you're able to see things that you normally wouldn't see.
Is it like astral projection? I mean, it is very similar.
Yes.
Do you actually?
Ingo Swann quickly was noted as the best. And I guess at one time, Stanford was doing research on him for the CIA at the time and the other people that were in the program. And at one point, Ingo Swann was right 85% of the time. And he was 85% accurate. On remote viewing. And he ended up doing remote viewing for SAIC, and his mission was to focus on extraterrestrials and UFOs. And in his book, Penetration, he claims he ended up remote viewing a alien base on the dark side of the moon.
Wow. So he actually saw the alien base on the moon. Or in his remote viewing, he saw this. You can see things, right? These are visualizations, correct?
That's correct.
Wow.
And that's been confirmed by some of the 600 witnesses in the Disclosure Project. Air Force sergeants and Air Force security personnel have said they have seen satellite orbiter photos that went around the moon that say this base is there.
So why haven't these been disclosed to the public? Why haven't I seen the dark side of the moon?
I really don't have a good answer for you, Melissa. If it was up to me, and that's part of the reason why I'm on the phone with you guys now, I think everybody should know these things.
Does it pose any kind of threat to us?
People think.
Is there a threat if people are privy to what's on the other side? Does that make aliens more real, too real for people?
I don't have a good answer for you on that. I think that when the government first started lying about all this stuff, it was, they didn't want people to panic, kind of like, back when Orson Welles that did War of the Worlds on the radio?
Right.
But I think people should know. I don't think people would panic, and I think it would kind of, erase the religious lines and political lines and a lot of things that divide the world today.
You think it would bring people together against the aliens?
So I think it's a good thing.
So in remote viewing, right, so if it's visualization and we can look into the future or into the past, there's no way of actually altering the time. So these aren't time travelers. They're just merely looking into another, perception of time or perception of space. But why can't they use this information to stop something like a 9/11 or prevent a huge terror attack or a bombing at a marathon? Why don't we use this technology to actually stop these incidences instead of just learning about things arbitrarily or learning about space aliens or UFOs, which is very important. I mean, it's needed information. But do these remote viewers focus on other issues or governmental issues or who did 9/11, who did that? I mean, do they do those type of things, or is it always just another kind of a worldly thing, or wherever it takes you, you go? But why don't they use the information to prevent things?
One of the remote viewers from the original Stargate project, his name is Ed Dames, and he's been on Coast to Coast several times, and he has a website where you can go to learn remote viewing. It's called learnrv.com, and I would also, if people are interested in learning the skill, direct them to the Farsight Institute, which is run by Dr. Courtney Brown. But back to Ed Dames, he got a group of people, probably 25 or 30 remote viewers that had some talent, and had them all focus on the next big world event that was going to be earth-shaking, something like a 9/11 or, you know, a huge earthquake, anything like that. And he started this back in about 2001, and he was able to predict the Japan earthquake and the nuclear reactor breaking open. And right. he even said then, because his viewers were able to see it, that Tokyo would be fine. And he made this prediction on Coast to Coast before it happened, and he nailed it.
Right.
And looking further into the future, it kind of comes up to the times we're at right now. The reason he was looking at these events in succession is because that if you are remote viewing into the future, there's no concept of time. You know that you're in the future, but you don't know what day it is, what hour, you know, you have no idea. There's no concept of time. So they were kind of looking at a succession of events.
Right.
And the first one was the Japan earthquake. The next one that, there's a few other minor ones that weren't really that important that I won't get into. I'll stick to the major stuff.
Sure.
But at the time he made this prediction, North Korea, this is early 2000s, North Korea did not have nuclear weapons. And his next big event was a nuclear explosion on the Korean Peninsula. And we're not talking about a test. He made it clear that a nuke was going to be popped in anger. So if I was in South Korea, I would be a little nervous about that right now.
Right. And just to give you a little background on Major Ed Dames, just to show you, he does have a lot of credibility. He is the world's foremost remote viewing teacher. Edward A. Dames, Major U.S. Army, retired as a decorated military intelligence officer and an original member of the U.S. Army Prototype Remote Viewing Training Program. He served as the training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit, the PSIINT. And currently serves as a executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, a private consulting group. And I do have a little clip of Mr. Dames. Let's hear Mr. Dames describe remote viewing in his own words.
Major Ed Dames was the training and operations officer for the top secret program.
This tool, remote viewing, had its genesis as a military intelligence collection tool. The CIA and the Army, the Navy to a certain extent, and I as an intelligence officer at very high levels of the government, Office of Secretary of Defense, Secretary of the Army level, with all the techniques and methods and tools that we had at our disposal, satellites, agents on the ground, there were just some targets, some programs that were so secret and so classified and so close-hold, they were impenetrable to all these systems. So as a tactic of desperation, the Army particularly looked at the potential of psychics and using ESP to collect intelligence.
So there you go. So there's Ed Dames and Ray. He's the one who coined the term the kill shot. Is that correct? This is his prediction that the kill shot will actually be the Armageddon-type situation where the Earth has changed?
Correct. I was going to mention that as well. You can go on YouTube if the listeners want to learn more about. It goes through the Kill Shot movie. It's like 45 minutes long on YouTube. If you just put in Ed Dames, the Kill Shot, you'll find it, no problem. But it goes through all of the predictions that he's made and have been proven correct, and it even has the clips of him on Coast to Coast predicting these things before they happen. And that is the last event. Actually, there's the nuclear device going off on the Korean Peninsula, and then the next event is that a shuttle or drone of some sort that we have up there in space is going to be knocked out of orbit by an asteroid.
Wow.
And the final thing is a solar flare, a huge solar flare that will pretty much kill all life on Earth in the southern hemisphere. The north is spared a little bit, lots of safe havens, but it'll definitely change the Earth, the solar flare that he's predicting. And like I said, we We have no idea when that's going to happen, and it's not a fact that it's going to happen, but he's been right so many times that I think you would have to take it seriously.
Why is this the first time that I'm hearing of the nukes on South Korea? I mean, if this is really an impending thing, at any point, now, a year from now, 5 years from now, why isn't the message getting out to allow these people time to protect themselves?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, listeners of Coast to Coast AM are definitely aware of it. But, the nightly news predictions from a remote viewer or psychic, that's not really newsworthy in most news editors' eyes, I guess.
And these in remote viewing, it's predictions, correct, Ray? That you give out predictions, right?
Well, yeah.
So it's not always looking in the past, but we predict the future, and that's what all this information you're telling us. So, like the nukes going off. I mean, these are all forward predictions from remote viewing sessions, correct?
That's correct.
And it's not just somebody making something up.
It's not just Ed Dames sitting in a room and coming up with this stuff. He's
right.
Got when he monitors one of his sessions, he'll have 30 people in a room.
Wow.
And pretty much all of them are drawing the same pictures, using the same descriptive words. He also predicted Hurricane Irene,
wow,
and his remote viewers on the East Coast.
Now, wait, these people have all been trained by him, correct?
That's correct.
And so he tells them what to do, and they all come to the same conclusion.
Right, but he doesn't give them much information. I mean, it's basically, he'll just tell them, I want you to think about what the next major event or natural disaster will be in the United States, and they do their thing, and almost everybody in the room come up with a tornado or hurricane in the case of Hurricane Irene, and that's a bonus feature at the end of the Kill Shot movie after the credits, as they show him and his viewers predicting Hurricane Irene.
Wow. Let me ask a question, Ray, about remote viewing. But while we finish up on that, how does remote viewing differ from hypnotism? And how are the and I'm just playing devil's advocate, of course, but could these people not be being hypnotized and maybe some sort of thoughts placed in their minds and then all come up with the same information? If I want to clarify what you said, that all these people, so multiple people, 30 people will sit in a room with certain instructions, and they will all remote view the same scene or the same vision, or is it all different? Does it all vary?
There's some variations. Not all 30 people might come up with that, but it's pretty conclusive when about 28 out of 30 does.
No kidding.
And
wow.
That's usually what happens. And as far as hypnotism goes, I have been hypnotized in PSYOPs programs. It definitely works. There's no question about that. I know a lot of people think it's BS.
Oh, no, hypnotism is definitely real.
There was a program not too long ago called Brainwashed on the Discovery Channel, where one of the best hypnotists in the world, his name's Michael Silver, he was challenged to actually hypnotize a person to kill somebody.
Wow.
And, of course, it was a fake gun, but the show started out with about 16 people. He weeded out like 8, then weeded out like the next 4. And as the show went on, he finally gets down to one guy that was very suggestible. And he was able to hypnotize this guy, make him go outside, grab a gun, and shoot at a person. It was blanks. It wasn't a real gun, but the guy holding the gun wasn't aware of that.
Right.
And he pretty much proved that the programs like MK Ultra, where the CIA was trying to brainwash civilians into killing people, he pretty much proved it's possible.
Very neat, man. Very interesting stuff. It is mind-boggling to imagine that there are keys to our mind or our conscience that can be unlocked with direction or with, requests or instruction. It's amazing why we can't all get a hold of that and do our own remote viewing, to improve our own lives or our loved ones' lives. I would love to see in the future of my daughter and see if there's something that I can do now to help her along the way. I mean, can we all take this in a personal way or a personal vein or some sort of remote viewing light where we can just kind of you know, do it for ourselves? Or is that not possible? Can we study Dame's work and get that information? Or is it for a specific few?
It's definitely possible. Like I said, anyone can be trained to do it. It takes practice, just like anything else, like learning to play basketball or football. But some people are just more gifted or genetically predispositioned to that sort of thing, just like, you know, basketball or football, to be good at it. But, yeah, anybody can be trained to do it. And, you know, you might not be the greatest, but who knows? You may be. I mean, it's definitely worth a shot, and I would encourage people to try it out.
Would you say the government focused more on global scale events, or were they looking at individuals and what impact they would have in the future as well?
A little bit of both, but mostly world events. For example, there was in the Killshot movie, Ed Dames talks about an incident. We talked about looking into the past and why, you know, why would you do that? It's something that happened in the past. You already know what happened. Well, there was an incident where they picked up a flash that off a satellite image in Africa. And it was kind of, it wasn't a nuclear explosion, but it was big. And they didn't know what it was. They had no idea what caused it. And they were able to use remote viewing to look back in the past, and they knew exactly what happened.
And they won't disclose it, will they?
And Ed Dames doesn't go into detail in that movie because he said it's still classified. But they were able to detect an event with a satellite and use remote viewers to go back and see what actually happened.
Right. So, it is amazing. Remote viewing. So in wrapping up our discussion about remote viewing, I know we're going to move on to the more heavy topic, or the reason kind of why we all got together was the Disclosure Project and the Serious Disclosure Project. And I know you were a friend of that. Let's just say a friend of that production. Before we move on to that, let me ask you one more question about remote viewing. And why can't they just go either to the beginning of time or to the end of time and tell us all, or study, you know, use it for their investigations? But why can't they just go all the way to the end or all the way to the beginning and let's figure this thing out for once and for all?
Because there's no time.
Time doesn't exist. Time is only an agreement. We definitely learned that. Why can't they just go all the way to the future? All the way.
They can't. They're not able to say, you know, go back to the beginning of time. Basically, Melissa's pretty much right. When you're in the remote viewing session, there really is no concept of time. You can see events, but there's no watch or calendar in front of you while you're seeing these things, or you don't see them in your viewing experience. So,
and you don't have a remote control, so you can't kind of fast forward or rewind at your leisure. You just kind of have to roll with wherever it's taking you, correct?
That's correct. That's really the best explanation I can give.
It right. Sounds like less control.
What do you think, Melissa?
Less controlled lucid dreams.
I would imagine so. Some sort of hallucination. What do you think? Remote viewing? Do you think it could be potentially used in your life to improve yourself, or to, not saying you need improvement, but I'm saying we all could certainly use some sort of, hand or guidance. Do you think remote viewing could, possibly do that for us personally?
I would like to think so.
I would like
Definitely.
To think so, too.
I would like to know what direction to go professionally.
All right. Well, let's,
interesting thing.
Go ahead.
Came
go ahead,
out
Ray.
Of the Stargate project was, I believe it was, I can't remember if it was Pat Price or Paul Smith, but one of those two, they said that they actually saw alien bases on the Earth, four of them, and that one of them was under Antarctica.
Wow.
And that's a popular theory by some conspiracy theorists that there is a base down there under Antarctica.
You think they're
but,
here now?
There were some very interesting things to come out of the Stargate project.
So you think they're here now? Aliens have invaded us on the Earth. Aliens have walked on this planet.
Definitely, they've walked on this planet. I don't know if they're still here. That's speculation. That's opinion. I don't know any of that to be fact. But there's been over 4,000 documented landings of UFOs, and the Disclosure Project has most of that information. They have a wealth of information. There's 600 witnesses. There's, you know, astronauts, governors, generals. Sure. Most of them are military, and there's about 200 people that are from intelligence agencies as well.
So people All right. with solid backgrounds,
well,
for sure.
Before we actually get
Absolutely.
Before we actually get deep into the serious project and we move our discussion to aliens and UFOs and all of that amazing information, let's take a listen to one of my favorite songs regarding the aliens and UFOs. And this is very near and dear to me. So let's check out Mr. Neil Diamond. Here we go.
Turn on your heart light. Let it shine wherever you go. Let it make a happy glow for all the world to see. Turn on your heart light. In the middle of a young
hoping you were going to play Pets by Pornos for Pyro.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. You know, I'm a little different, a little different style there. But, hey, turn on your heart light. Come on. Does that not warm us all up on a beautiful Saturday afternoon as we're about to embark on a discussion of UFOs? Okay, Ray, here we go, buddy. So the Disclosure Project, Dr. Stephen Greer, this is his serious project, the title is Serious Disclosure Project. Why don't you give us some information on that? I do have a little written information, but tell us about Sirius Disclosure Project and your work with him.
Sure, no problem. Dr. Greer began this a long time ago. I think he started in about 1993. And he basically, over time, became the person that whistleblowers came to. If you were a military person, if you were from an intelligence agency and you had real information on this sort of thing, he became the guy that you went to. And in 2001, he held a National Press Club press conference event in Washington, D.C. And it was pretty much, this was, I did say 2001, but it was pretty much subject to a total media blackout. You can watch it on YouTube. And probably other places on the internet, but it did not get much attention at the time. And fast forward to 12 years later, he has put together this movie, Sirius, which premieres Monday in L.A., and there's a premiere May 9th in Charlottesville, Virginia. And it's going to be available on video on demand soon, and I'm going to put up information probably starting tomorrow and Monday on how people can watch this film on the internet. If you'd like information on it, you can go to my Facebook page. It's Ray Weir, R-E-Y-W-I-E-R. And it's a public page, so you don't have to become my friend or follow me or anything like that. You can just glance at it with, but if you want to friend me, that's fine too. I could always use more friends. But we will be releasing on information the next few days on how people can view this movie. And it's going to be pretty shocking. Dr. Greer claims to have the body of a deceased extraterrestrial that was found a couple of years ago.
Wow.
In the Atacama Desert of Chile.
Wow.
And NASA actually has a large facility down there because the Atacama Desert is the closest conditions on Earth to Mars, which is also pretty interesting.
Wow. And now, is that anywhere close to the Nazca lines? I know that's Peru, but is this the same region? I mean, a lot of crazy stuff goes on down there, doesn't it?
It's the West Coast, kind of like West Central South America. I've never even been to South America, so I'm not sure how close it is to Nazca. I couldn't give you an educated guess on that.
Very interesting.
But, there does seem to be a lot of UFO activity down there. I mean, the people of Brazil, to them, when we, you know, we talk about these things, we debate them, but there's no debate in Mexico and South America. Everybody right. down there is all in. Aliens are real. They definitely exist.
You're right about that. And also in China, you know, there's a huge belief movement in the UFO world. But let me read a quick breakdown on the Sirius film, and I got this from the Huffington Post. So let's take a quick listen to this here. So it's an upcoming documentary. It promises to show an alleged tiny alien, a little tiny alien being that was found a few years ago, as you stated, in Chile's Atacama Desert. Is that how that's how you pronounce that? And it's very tiny, and it's about 6 inches from head to toe. The film called Sirius will also depict how readily available forms of alternative energy technology are what extraterrestrials may be using to travel here from the cosmically improbable distances between their home world and ours. Sirius will include graphic footage of the supposedly humanoid entity of unknown classification, and they'll be doing some sort of DNA sequencing on that little alien body. A side view x-ray of the minuscule creature was also released to reveal its internal structures. The film is Greer's latest effort to shine a light on the supposed cover-up about visitors from other planets. Now, in 1993, Greer created the Disclosure Project with the goal of getting the government to fess up its alleged UFO and ET knowledge, as well as information about advanced energy and propulsion methods. So there you go. That's just a little brief description. But how did you get involved with Dr. Greer? You know, how were you drafted through your CIA connections? I mean, was this alien information that you shared with Greer and his Disclosure Project things that you learned while you were in the CIA? Was this information you were privy to?
Right. I've been aware of the project, you know, since the press conference in 2001. That's when I started following him. I got my burn notice, was actually kicked out of the CIA. I didn't leave in early 2009.
Wow.
And I began talking to Dr. Greer at the beginning of 2012, and I did my interview with him in the spring of 2012, and it wasn't long after that I was taken to Tampa for a debriefing by the CIA, and they were listening to all my phone calls. I was being tailed for about a month and a half, and that finally all chilled out, but they were not happy that I decided to talk to Dr. Greer at first.
Well, what got you kicked out of the CIA?
I was in one of the last things I did. I got promoted up to what they call Project Zipper, which is basically I would call people or stop in at their house and talk with them, and these were people that had witnessed UFO events or other things that the government didn't really want going out. And if it got to that point, if I couldn't do it amicably, basically I would deliver threats.
So the government...
You were the men in black, Ray.
Well, how did the government not want this right? information out, but then they still sent you out to collect the information?
They would send you out to collect information for people who saw UFOs? That is the men in black. You show up... You hit them with that light, and then they don't remember anything, right? I mean, how accurate
right.
was that?
I never wore black.
Okay.
I wore normal clothes.
All right.
I wouldn't call myself a man in black. I think more of the men in black are the third tier, the people that, you know, if I wasn't effective in talking to them and they continued to talk or do things that the government didn't like, there's another group of people that are probably affiliated with the National Security Agency that, you know, would rough people up or even take it further than that.
But your goal was to persuade people to stop.
Below that.
So is that right?
So ask him a question. That's a good question.
Your goal was to meet up with these people and persuade them to stop talking about their experiences.
Exactly.
Wow. Wow.
Okay.
So the government putting pressure on the common man, you know, I can't stand that kind of stuff, Ray. But, you know, you had a job to do, and I certainly respect that.
I didn't like it either.
Right.
You know, I've always been, since 2001, I started following Dr. Greer. I approved of what he was doing. I was for this. I've always been for this information coming out. And the last few months of my CIA career, I actually found myself in a position of a job I hated. I was the exact opposite of what I wanted to be. I was trying to shut people up who had some of this information, and really in my heart I wanted it to come out. So I wasn't happy, and I didn't like myself very much when I was asked to do these things.
Okay, and let me also preface Mr. Greer's, Dr. Greer's information that he, you can find him at the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and that is a great place to start to find this information. But let's start in the very beginning of it with the alien conversation, Ray. And let me ask you a question, because on my show I like to ask very direct questions, and we're going to start with, I'm going to ask you personally, do aliens exist?
Definitely. Without question, 100%. It's not even speculation.
Okay.
I know this to be a fact. I'm one of the few. There's probably several thousand people that know for a fact that aliens are real, but I'm one of them. There's no question in my mind.
Okay.
But they don't call them aliens, do they? They have different names for them, right?
They call them
aliens.
EBEs,
is good.
Extraterrestrial biological entities is the official government term.
Say that one more time, Ray. What was that? EVE. What does it mean?
Extraterrestrial biological entity.
Got it. Got it. So it's EB.
As what do they call it?
Yeah, just the initials, EBE.
Okay. All right. So EBEs, and they exist. Are they among us? So let me ask you another question. Do they look like grays? Do they have the big round head?
Is one of us in this room an alien?
Oh, we might find out by the end of this conversation. But do they look like the aliens we see commonly, Ray? Is it got the big gray head and the black eyes, or do they look like us? Have they bred into being humans? Give us the deal. What do aliens look like? Since you're sure they exist, how do they exist? In what forms do they exist?
There's definitely grays, and I've read the testimony of some of the other 600 witnesses in the Disclosure Project, and you know, none of the testimonies contradict each other. They're pretty much all pointing to the same story among these 600 witnesses. And some of the people that were higher level up in government that would have and should have been in the know say that the Greys inhabit three different planets. And the Greys that inhabit those three different planets do differ in appearance. Some are, I've heard descriptions of 7 to 8 feet tall, and mostly you hear the ones that are like 3, 3.5 feet tall. And
right.
There's also some that are even smaller than that. And the reason for that is there's differences in their planets, in the atmosphere, in the gravitational pull, that sort of stuff.
Right.
But so the movie is called, the Disclosure Project movie is called Sirius because the ones that seem to be visiting our planet most often are from the star Sirius and the planet Sirius B that goes around that star.
Wow. So you know directly where they're from and what planet they're from. Now, how did we get that information? Does Greer have that, and he kind of explains how we find out where they're exactly from?
I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know how much he goes into that.
Okay.
And I don't really have a good answer for you on how they know that, but they do seem to know it.
Okay. But they said the little 6-inch one was 5 to 7 years old.
Yeah, did they say it was 5 to 7?
They did.
Oh my goodness.
Something is done on that being.
This thing's freaking me out, Ray. This little tiny alien thing, it's freaking me out. Now, I believe that we have been visited. I certainly am no skeptic in that regard. You'd be a fool to think that our world exists alone in the universe. But this little tiny alien, man, I'm really starting to think about it. And I'm thinking, well, if they're that little, then their spaceships are that little. And we're looking for big things, right? Maybe we should be looking for little tiny things. Or was he some sort of freak of the universe? I mean, what was this little creature? Tell me about this little alien. I know you've looked at him on the news and all of that. What is your, opinion on that? Is that real? Could that possibly be real? They x-rayed him. He has a spine. He has little, guts on the inside. I mean, what's the deal? What is that thing? Is it an alien? And why can't they bring it to the Smithsonian and we can drop him in a vat of juice and look at him for 20 years?
Gross.
I think it's definitely real. Dr. Greer's devoted his life to this, and he would not risk a hoax. I mean, he would not risk his whole reputation and everything that he's been doing for the last 20 years on this thing being fake. And he's done. He's completed the testing. They had to go down to South America to do it. They were afraid if they brought it up here to America that it would be confiscated or taken by intelligence agencies.
Wow.
So it's still down there now, and I believe that he will have independent scientists go and test it. They did extensive testing. I mean, it already has been pretty much tested independently, but the things they know about it is that it's not from this planet. It's not genetically related to anything on this planet, and it is 5 to 7 years old, and it did spend time living in our atmosphere. And the question I really have is, you know, was this thing left behind? I mean, by, like, parents? I mean, how did it get here? Because they didn't find a UFO crash or anything down there associated with it that I'm aware of. But
it would be tiny,
that's,
right?
That's
right?
The real question I have. But it is here. They found it, and I believe it's real.
It's unbelievable. And if you've ever seen the movie Trilogy of Terror, Karen Black, there's the at the end of that, there's this little tiki doll. And you got to see that movie. Please go see that. And I swear to God, this little tiki doll is just like this little alien thing. So I'm looking at the alien. I'm watching the Trilogy of Terror, and I'm totally, I don't know, I'm beside myself now, Ray. But I've seen Dr. Greer picking at this thing, taking little pieces off of it, you know, and testing it all out. So you're telling me that they did a DNA test on this thing. They can tell us how old it is. Now, how do our DNA tests work on an alien body? How is that even possible?
Yeah, wouldn't they just hit brick walls?
Wouldn't they have some sort of alternate DNA or XNA? Or why would they even have DNA? Or are we all organically the same compounds, you know, underneath?
Well, it's made of the same elements that we're made of. But I believe that, you know, the combinations and the way that it's put together, and possibly even, I'm speculating here, I wasn't involved in the scientific testing of this thing,
okay.
And I'm not a geneticist, but I believe its body runs differently. It may breathe a different gas than we do, something like that that separates it from humans and every other animal on this earth, pretty much.
Got it.
And as far as how do we know, you were asking for more detail on the genetic side, and I'm just not educated enough in genetics to speculate on that, really. Your guess is as good as mine, but
right.
They seem to be pretty sure. And like I said, I don't think Dr. Greer would risk a hoax. And our government has plenty of alien bodies. I'm convinced of that. There's enough witnesses in the Disclosure Project that testify to that. One of them is Sergeant Cliff Stone, who's been with Dr. Greer since the beginning. He was his specialty in the Army. I believe he was a sergeant, was cleanup of radiological, biological waste, anything like that. And he claims he's cleaned up about 12 UFO crashes, seen live and dead aliens, the whole thing.
Unbelievable. So you're telling me that there's more than one Roswell. You're saying that this person has cleaned up 12 or multiple, but we've only heard of one. You know, that kind of leaked out back, you know, what, 60 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, there's several that are pretty popular. There's, you know, the Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, and a lot of the ones, one of the people haven't heard of a lot is Kingman, Arizona, but that happened shortly after Roswell, and that's one of the ones where they supposedly even retrieved live aliens. And I believe our government has several alien bodies. They're kept in places, probably like Area 51, Lake Patterson.
So you really believe that, huh? That kind of Hollywood or Independence Day of view on it, that there is something possibly out there in Area 51, you know, where we see it on TV all the time, from a distance, of course, that there's possibly bodies there being preserved and studied. I mean, alien bodies actually in Area 51. You really honestly believe that? I mean, having your government experience, I mean, maybe you're telling us something, right?
I do believe that. I don't know a lot about Area 51. I've never been there or anything like that.
Okay.
But I can tell you, I believe everything's being moved to what they call Area 52. It's Dugway Proving Ground, and that's about 75 miles southeast of Salt Lake City, Utah. And I think it's actually land-wise, it's bigger than Area 51, and that's in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
And there's an episode, if people wanted to get more information on that, it was the last episode ever of UFO Hunters. It was yanked from the air after they put this episode on.
It's a great show, by the way.
It is. It's my favorite dealing with the subject. Bill Burns is great.
He's great.
I love the guy.
Absolutely.
But they interview cops and stuff like that were in the area. They've seen giant lasers knocking down planes. They've seen jets turning invisible in the sky. We do have that invisibility capability now.
Wow.
Where we can just turn tanks, people, jets, whatever you want, we can turn it invisible at the snap of a finger.
Right.
They've seen UFOs coming out and going in. And Battelle is a major hub for the Department of Air Force Intelligence. And while I was there, I did get to see a satellite photograph of, it was basically a chemtrail of something that came out of Area 51, shot across the eastern United States, and was halfway across the Atlantic Ocean. And they estimated the speed of this thing was about 10,000 miles an hour.
Wow.
But
no kidding.
Why are they all landing here? Why are they all crashing here? Why don't they go crash in Australia and the Australian government's
the
like,
USA.
Hey, we got
they
some
do.
Aliens
it's America.
Over here.
They're coming to
I mean,
America.
Why aren't the international governments coming forward with this? Or is it just the U.S. trying to shut them down? Does it really all come
everywhere.
Back to clean energy?
The U.S. is pretty much the leader in the secrecy. All these other countries have come out. France released a report called the Cometa Report. Basically says UFOs are real. Colonel John B. Alexander did a study, and he concluded that UFOs are real. He's not in the Army now. He works with Bigelow Aerospace and kind of the next step of what's going on with UFO research. But, the countries in South America, Europe, Great Britain's close. All these countries are coming forward and saying, hey, there's something going on here. And we don't hear about it in this country because people here aren't interested in foreign news. But we're pretty much bringing up the ass end in disclosure. Other countries are way ahead of us.
Got it. For the governmental agencies that name all of these installations, naming it Area 52, probably not the smartest thing to do if you want to hide the fact that it's just an extension of Area 51, right? So,
that's the name that UFO bus have given. It's a nickname.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called the Dugway Proving Ground. It's
Got
been
it.
There for a while.
All right. Let's look at some more alien type, questions and things that have always been out there, and get your opinion on that. You have affirmed that aliens do exist. What's up with abductions? And I've actually had people who I care about and I respect tell me that they've actually been abducted and that they've actually had things implanted into their body. And Ray, I don't believe them, and I know these people. But tell me about abductions. What happens during abductions? Are they real? And do they actually leave a piece of their technology in us, and for what purpose? Do you know?
Abductions are definitely real. Alien implants are definitely real. I studied them at the University of California, San Diego. It was part of the reason I was transferred out west. Was to look at these. And there's an author of a book called Aliens in the Scalpel. His name's Dr. Roger K. Lear. He's been removing alien implants from people that claim they've been abducted for a couple decades now. And he's probably, up to this point, he's probably got about 20 of those things. And I can also say for a fact that Lockheed Martin has been studying these at UCSD, and they've also been removing their own implants from people as well. And these things have been independently tested. Dr. Franklin Rule, he's a theoretical nuclear physicist from UCLA. He concluded they're definitely real. They're definitely extraterrestrial. They're covered in kind of a synthetic biological sheath and surrounded by the person's own neural cells, and they're usually embedded in a neuron either in the arm or the leg.
Wow. Yes.
And they emit a radio frequency. When they're actually still hooked in to the person, they can detect a very strong radio frequency that could carry a lot of information coming from these implants. And when they take them out of the person or unplug them from their neural system, the signal shuts down.
How do people know when they have them? You just wake up one day and say, oh, I feel a lump in my finger. Or, I mean, these things, I've seen videos, they're so tiny, microscopic almost.
Yeah, they are. They're usually found on an MRI or a CT or an X-ray, something like that. People usually don't know they have them.
So these just show up randomly.
That makes sense.
People don't wake up one day and say, I got to get to the hospital. You think they're collecting information for days, weeks, possibly years before people ever...
Until they discover it. That's good. Yeah. So it was in their body for years, and then they have they fall down, and then they get an X-ray, and here we go, right? Something in there recording their life. I mean, what's the purpose of the implant? I mean, do we know what they want with that? Is it tracking? I mean, is it like a tag on a deer in the wild? What is it?
I think I don't think there's any definitive answer. I think you're probably right. It's probably just like we tag animals here.
Okay.
But you know, since they are plugged into our neural system, and there's many of the witnesses report that have encountered aliens that, you know, they can read your mind telepathically and talk to you telepathically, that sort of thing. A lot of people that I worked with that were studying these things believe that they could actually, you know, access all the information that's in your brain through this little device embedded in your neuron, and that radio signal's beaming it back to somebody. We don't know that for sure. It's speculation, but that's definitely one thing we've considered when we were looking at these things.
I feel like they would set off alarms at the airport. I mean, they're tiny, but they do have metallic...
Something special in there. It's alien metal, though. See, maybe our X-ray machines can't see that. I don't know. Maybe they set it off, and maybe that's why everyone...
Biological sheath, and it's usually embedded pretty deep in your thigh. So
and there's all this organic red stuff growing around
my back, a lot of it, and I've gone through airport detectors and not set it off before.
You said you have one?
Yes, that's what I was going to say. So you have one, Ray? You have an implant, an alien implant in your body right now?
And you know it, and you're cool with it?
It's not in my body right now. I saw a couple of UFOs in my time at Tampa. And we believe that it happened during one of those sightings. I was abducted. I don't know how it got there, but I had a car accident in 2005, and they found it on an MRI, and that's when I was shipped out to California from Battelle. At this time, I had been to Tampa for 2 years. I was back at Battelle for three, and it was towards the end of that stint in Battelle in 2005 that they found this thing and sent me out to California to work on this team looking at alien implants. And they actually left mine in for most of the time I was there, and it was removed in December. I don't want to give the exact date because I don't want doctors to be implicated or the people that were there.
Right.
But it was removed in December of 2008. And it was kept by Lockheed Martin, and that's who removed it.
If I had an implant, I would get that thing out so fast.
Oh,
I would be
I'm
scratching my own skin to get rid of it.
I would be cutting my arm open.
Medical testing, mental testing. They did every test that you could possibly imagine on me while I had that in my body. And most of the time, I wasn't even told what they were looking for exactly. But it was never-ending tests.
Now, why won't you go to this doctor and have that thing taken out? I mean, are you thinking about that, or is that a possibility?
Oh, it has been taken out. It was removed in December of 2008 by Lockheed
All
Martin
right.
doctors.
Okay, well, thank God they're not still tracking you there, Ray. Now, let me ask you a question, Ray. Are you willing to take a caller or maybe face a possible question from a listener?
Sure, why not?
Hello, who do we have on the line?
Hi, my name's Linda.
Hello, Linda.
Yeah.
How are you today, and where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Los Angeles, California.
Well, that's where we are. We're having a beautiful day here in L.A. How can I help you? You have a question for Ray?
Yes, I do.
Okay, what's your question for Ray?
I'm asking about if there's any such thing as alien hybrids, and if there are, how would we recognize them?
That's a great question.
Yes, Ray, alien hybrids, do they mix? Are they multi, racial, I guess we can say? How do they blend in, and do we know we're talking to an alien, right?
I believe there are, but this is speculation. I don't have any proof of that. You know, most of the people that have been abducted talk about either sperm being removed from their bodies or eggs being removed from their bodies, so... My personal belief is that they are, making humans up there, and that they could possibly be brought back to this planet. There could be aliens among us. And some of the UFO abductees actually say that the people looked human. I believe there's a race of aliens out there that look pretty much exactly like us, and they're always described as blonde or white hair, blue eyes, so they're pretty Nordic in appearance, that particular group. But again, I don't have any proof of that. That's all speculation, in my opinion, but I believe that's the way it is.
Got it. Linda, do you believe in aliens and what you're hearing today? Do you believe we have been visited by other cultures and worlds?
Oh, yes, definitely.
You do. Now, have you yourself been visited or with any of the experiences we've been sharing today?
Oh, no, but I am very into remote viewing and remote influencing. I have followed a couple of courses. So, but I do believe that the world is, and the universe is just too vast for us to sit down and say, oh, we're the only beings that exist and everything else is just space. And I think there's just been too much evidence and too many questions unanswered to dismiss all of it.
I agree with you there, Linda, wholeheartedly. The universe is too huge to think that we would be the only ones, right?
Right, and we haven't even explored, even 10% of it. I didn't manage to get on Mars, and that's about it. So there's just too much. And, I've read some books on alien hybrids, and I was really, just kind of fascinated with that. And they said something in the book that you can recognize them because they don't like to, when they go to restaurants, they don't like to use, they bring their own cutlery and things like that.
Really?
That sounds like Asians.
I'm writing that down. I wrote that down. I'm going to look for people. Now you say you've read this in a book, right? That something about they bring their own cutlery to a restaurant, the alien folks or the hybrids? What do you think, Ray?
Yeah, they're like germaphobes. They're very particular about hugging.
Maybe I am an alien. So, very interesting stuff there, Linda, and I appreciate you joining us for our show today. We're having a very fun discussion with Ray Weir. Do you have one more question for our expert? He's a CIA guy. He's been involved with a lot of Okay, Linda's gone. No problems. Thank you for calling in, Linda. We appreciate that. That was a lot of fun. So, Ray.
One other thing I wanted to mention.
Sure, go right ahead.
And Melissa, about alien implants. And there's a lot of videos of Dr. Roger K. Lear on the internet. But one in particular that people should watch if they want to know more about this is there's a show called UFO Files. And the episode that he is on is called UFO Hunters, which is kind of confusing because there's a show called UFO Hunters. But it's on the show UFO Files. The episode is called UFO Hunters. And they show one of the procedures Dr. Lear does where he's trying to remove one of these implants, and it's actually moving away from his scalpel.
I think I've seen
that. It's undeniable. You can see it. I believe they're doing it under fluoroscopy.
Wow.
And it's actually dodging his forceps. And the same thing actually happened with mine. I have 5 lap incisions in the back of my right thigh. There was originally 3, but when they tried to remove my implant, I guess it was dodging them and moving around in my leg. So
they cut you 5 times.
A couple of extra holes.
So now
no
do you
kidding.
Think that is being controlled by the aliens directly, or do you think that it's what the material is made of? It's just made to react and move away from conflicting metals?
My guess is it's made to repel metal and to stay away from metal. I don't think that, you know, there's a guy up there on a switchboard in the sky moving this thing around like a video game. But who knows? I mean, that's speculation. I don't really know the answer to that question. I just know what happened.
Right. Now, I have seen the videos that you're speaking of, and I have seen that little thing that he's trying to dig out of there move away. And of course, we always have to play a little bit of the devil's, advocate and say that, it could be shrapnel. You know, there could be various things in these people's bodies. But you know what, Ray? I think I certainly believe you that you say that you have had one of these in your body. I certainly wouldn't have any reason to dispute that. So abductions, you're telling me your aliens, you're telling me they're real. This little 5-inch tiki-looking guy, you're telling me he's real. And then you're saying abductions have happened, and so you had to be abducted. Do you remember your actual abduction?
I don't believe I was abducted. I had no missing time or anything that I've ever been aware of in my life. I've only seen two UFOs. They were both in Tampa. One was on Paso Grande Beach. The other was in Clearwater Beach. What I believe happened, and again, this is speculation, I can't prove this, but I believe that implant was teleported into my leg. And it's not that far-fetched if you know some of the history of what happened down in Brazil in the 1970s. There's an episode of UFO Files called Brazil's Roswell that I would encourage everyone to watch. You can find it on YouTube. But basically, for several weeks, the people on this small island called Colares were terrorized by UFOs, and almost all of the victims had the same description, where they had like burn marks on their bodies and blood had been taken from their body. And it was almost as if it was, teleported out, like
wow.
Somehow a light beam was shot and removed fluid from their body and the thing took off. And all these people were coming in with the same symptoms.
Now, we've already established
wow.
that the government has access to hologram technology. Is it possible
Definitely.
These UFO sightings are just the government messing with us, just holograms?
They didn't have this technology. Not even the U.S. government had it back in 1977. And these, sightings have been going on a lot longer than that. So it's possible that some today could be holograms. I mean, that's definitely, they have the capability to do that, but not back then.
If they can bring Tupac back to life, they could certainly throw a spaceship up in the sky. But anyway, Ray, so you mentioned that the kind of the situation, what you were just saying, was that the blood was missing and all that. That reminds me of cattle mutilations. What is your opinion on cattle mutilations? Is that something that's happening? I mean, if you follow UFO hunters, then they're allegedly, there's alien bases in what, Agua Dulce or whatever, wherever that is in New Mexico, and they take these underground bases and they take these cattle parts back to these underground bases, and these whole, fascinating stories. But what's up with cattle mutilations? Do you think that has something to do with UFOs and aliens and their investigations?
Are they putting the cattle back alive?
No, they're dead. They're mutilated.
Oh, they're all twisted up. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And there's no... Go ahead, Ray.
I do believe there's a connection, but I don't have any more information on that than anybody else who watches these shows like UFO Hunters. That lady asked earlier about hybrids, and that's what a lot of the speculation is about that underground base in Dulce, which I do believe it's there. I don't know that for a fact, but...
Okay. It's Dulce, New Mexico, right?
Experiments going on underground at Dulce, New Mexico.
Got it. And there's the Mesa. What is it called? The Mesa they
Archuleta
speak?
Mesa.
Archuleta Mesa. That's what I was trying to speak of. Amazing things. Melissa, Archuleta Mesa, they claim that there is an underground base.
I've heard about this.
Oh, my goodness.
Like 50 feet under the ground. And it's
way under there.
It's aliens walking around, and they've got their labyrinth of
And people go down there, and
hallways.
They've had to fight with these guys. It's serious.
I want to see
serious.
Pictures. I want to see video.
And one guy, and I'm sure you know who I'm talking about, Ray. I don't have his name, but he claimed that he was actually down in the... It's on YouTube. I wish I had the name, but he said
Paul
he was...
Snyder.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. And he claims he was down in that underground thing, and he put his hand up, and they shot a beam at him, and it burned his fingers off, and he shows that in his presentation that his fingers were burned off by this ray. I mean, it's quite fascinating. But yes, all of this appears to be happening or claims to be happening underneath New Mexico or in these underground bases. What do you think about the underground base network stories or philosophies? Do you think that everything's connected underground, like they say, with all this alien, you know, laboratory stuff and investigations?
I think it's possible. Yeah, I know what you're speaking of. There's theories that all of these secret bases, like Area 51, Dulce, Dugway Proving Ground, are all connected by some sort of underground tunnel system.
Right.
And I think it's definitely possible. I think we have things that we use. We probably have directed energy laser drills. We have the technology for all kinds of stuff like that. So it's possible. I don't know.
Right, right. Now, I do have to ask you, since it's the most notorious UFO incident, you know, or I guess say most public UFO incident, I have to ask you about Roswell. And what do you think actually happened there? We'd kind of be remiss not talking about that. Do you feel that that was legitimate? That some sort that I guess that the story goes that a UFO flew into some sort of radar patch or area where radar would, you know, knocked it down and it crashed and bodies were recovered and that we still have those bodies somewhere. And they, of course, if you look all that up, it tells you exactly where they took them, Wright, Patterson, all of this and that. But what do you think about Roswell, man? Where do you stand on that? Was that legitimate or was that a weather balloon?
It was definitely for real.
I think so, too.
When it happened, the material was taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and it was actually studied at Battelle starting in 1950 by a guy named Dr. Cross. This is all in a book that came out in 2009 called Witness to Roswell. And that's really one thing I want people to take away from this discussion today is that Battelle Memorial Institute is no joke. It often gets overlooked. You know, people talk about EG&G, SAIC, some of these other companies that are involved in black programs. And Battelle's pretty much the daddy of them all. They got their hands in everything.
Wow.
And they're pretty much, they have contracts to work in conjunction with, but they mainly overlook all the other national laboratories like Oak Ridge, Lawrence Livermore. And it's pretty much the major hub for the Department of Air Force Intelligence.
No kidding. Well, very interesting stuff. And I'm certainly writing all that down. I'm going to do my homework when I go home and, you know, look all that up and study it. And I appreciate that.
Back to Roswell real quick.
Yes, go right ahead.
I believe there were two UFO crashes, and UFO Hunters did an episode on that as well. It was called The Real Roswell was the name of the episode. But and we have witnesses in the Disclosure Project. I forget the name of the gentleman right now, but he is from the NRO, and he was there when we basically focused these super powerful radars on these UFOs and were able to knock them down out of the sky. And there were at least two crashes. The first one nobody even knew about. That was the first one we got to and cleaned up. The second one became known as the Roswell incident. And there's still speculation on the third. We may have brought down a third UFO, but I don't know that, and I haven't heard much of it, you know, being found. But there were definitely two different UFO crashes and crash sites around Roswell when that happened.
Very interesting stuff. But what do you think about Roswell, Melissa? You know that story where, you know, the aliens crashed back in the 40s and they took the bodies and they took them somewhere. What do you think about that? Do you think Roswell's possible?
You know what's really fascinating to me is that there's so many stories all across the world. So many individuals, independent people are always coming together and coming up with the same ideas. They have kind of the same theories. They have kind of the same experiences. And it's really hard to ignore all of this evidence. You know, clearly these people aren't all going to conventions and saying, this is what we're going to go tell everyone.
Right.
You know, they're coming out from all walks of life, all across the world, people who have an interest in it, people who don't have any interest in it, and they're all reaching the same conclusions. So I think there's definitely something to be said for all of this knowledge.
Right. Well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the commonality in all of the stories kind of ties it all together, Ray, is that there's so many people who have seen the same things over and over again, the same shaped crafts, the same looking beings. And, you know, the abduction stories were all the same. And these people don't know each other. Now, possibly they could be influenced by things they read and see. But, you know, I have a feeling that there's been so much commonality in those stories that, you know, there certainly is, you know, some bearing on all of those, you know, to possibly being the truth. But let's get it back on the disclosure serious topic here in the few minutes that we have left. And I have the serious spot or the trailer from the internet. And I'd like to go ahead and play Dr. Stephen Greer's serious trailer. And that'll kind of get us in the mood to get us out of here today. Now, let me go ahead and click that and then we'll discuss serious in a little more depth. Here we go.
The problem is not proving that UFOs exist. It's when you begin to expose the energy and propulsion systems behind how they're getting here.
What scientists need to do is they need to look at the hardcore evidence, decide that, oh my gosh, ETs are real, and then get over that. Then you can start extrapolating.
These sciences have been around for decades. They have been ruthlessly kept secret because of the power of a centralized petrodollar oil gas coal system. And right now, these misanthropic sociopaths are running the planet into the ground.
Governments have not gone far enough. So we've decided that as people to form our own movement.
What we are attempting to achieve is a device which defeats the perpendicular force of gravity.
We have so many modes of converting quantum vacuum energy or zero point energy.
This possible EVE was found in the Atacama Desert.
We have the best scientists that are going to be doing the DNA testing.
We have 1,150 teams of CE5 ambassadors.
I can attest to the fact that real phenomenon happens here.
And this is probably the most important thing going on this planet today, and yet nobody talks about it.
If we come together, we can make this happen in a matter of months, not decades.
There you are. It's heavy stuff. Dr. Stephen Greer and the Serious Disclosure Project that will be available. You said the next few days there, Ray?
Yeah, the premiere is Monday in Los Angeles at the Regal Cinema. And they're having another premiere May 9th in Charlottesville at, I think it's called the Paramount Theater. I don't have it in front of me right now.
Okay.
But, yeah, the next couple days I'll be releasing information on how you can watch it online. It'll be video on demand. I'm not sure what the price is yet. I'll be getting all that information probably Monday during the day and putting it on my Facebook page. And if people want to look me up there and look up the information, again, it's Ray Weir. It's R-E-Y-W-I-E-R, and it's a public page.
And what kind of impact does Dr. Greer realistically expect this film to bring out versus, you know, what there's obviously a lot of potential there. But what does he realistically expect is going to happen?
Well, the ultimate goal is to release these free energy systems that we have reverse engineered, that we have gotten from UFO technology, crashed UFOs. They call it taking energy from the vacuum, and there's plenty of witnesses in the Disclosure Project that know a lot about that. I mean, I'm not a physicist. I'm not an engineer. I don't know a lot about it. But basically, the principle is, you know, since the Big Bang, we're pretty much all flying through space. The universe is expanding. All of these large bodies flying through space creates an enormous amount of kinetic energy, and that's just one of the zero-point energy systems that can be harnessed. There's actually other ways that I'm not that familiar with, but one of the guys who is, it's a witness for the project, is Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Bearden from the U.S. Army. And he's also featured in an episode of Jesse Ventura's Conspiracy Theory where they talk about the death ray. That's the name of the episode. But that's actually a very good episode to watch. It's very informative, and you learn some things about zero-point energy on that show.
Are you talking specifically about things like elements 114 and 115?
Well, Thomas Bearden knows a lot about that, and they did work on that at Battelle. Elements 113 and 115 were synthesized back in 2004. Element 115 is famous because Bob Lazar claimed that that's what UFOs use to fly, and I do believe that. And Element 113 is, it can be used for cold fusion.
Okay, wait a
and
second.
They've done several experiments where Element 113 has been successful in cold fusion.
Okay, now, Ray, sorry to interrupt you there, but I like to understand everything and make sure that people are out there understand what we're talking about. So you're saying elements. So you're saying that describe how these elements came about. What are they? You kind of just described that, but what is element? What did you say? 113 and 115, and how do we know that those exist? Are those are different than the elements that we have now on Earth, right?
Well, they are. They're synthesized elements. They're basically made in a lab. They don't exist naturally on Earth, but I mean, they definitely exist. This is, you know, this is something you can punch into Google right now and look up. They were both synthesized in 2004, probably earlier than that. But you know, that's when the government claims that they were first able to synthesize them, and it was done at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in conjunction with there was some national laboratory in Russia that was in on the project. We were actually working with the Russians on that.
Why were they trying to create elements? What was the catalyst or what was the motive in trying to create the elements?
Well, that's what's interesting. You know, it could be speculation, but Bob Lazar claimed that these UFOs ran on Element 115.
Oh, okay.
And Element 113 was just a step to get to 115. They, you know, basically they're adding to the nuclear mass of these elements to get them up to these numbers. But okay. Element 113 was a stepping stone, and they happened to find along the way that it can be used for cold fusion.
Can you explain exactly how Element 115 works in as far as energy, clean energy? How it propels these spaceships?
I can't. I'm not that smart to do it, and there's probably only a few people on this planet that know about that. That's probably about as top secret as you can get on how that stuff actually works.
Okay, basically.
And I'm not chemically or physically.
I'm still confused, though, Ray.
To give you that explanation.
I'm still confused. I want to understand what we're talking about. So these elements were philosophized, the people who study alien technology determined that there were specific elements that did not exist to us that
Correct.
Possibly ran their propulsion systems. And
Correct.
So they synthesized and devised these elements in a laboratory. And what did they find? I mean, so do they have them now in their physical form? Can they use them? Have we used them? Have we converted them into engine power? What do we do with it?
Well, it would be speculation for my part, but I believe all of the above. One of the latest things I read on Element 115 was that I think that the government claimed that they had only made about 50 atoms of this element because it required so much energy to synthesize. They probably used nuclear power even to synthesize these elements. But, I think that our government is building alien reproduction vehicles. We are building our own UFOs, and I think that they possibly are using these elements to power them.
Wow. Now, Ray, do you feel that, obviously you feel that we use alien technology or share it, right?
Without question. We've been reverse engineering since Roswell.
Well, let me ask you.
The integrated circuit, Kevlar, there's night vision goggles, all of that has come from reverse engineering.
Right. But why isn't our technology more advanced? See, that's one of my questions when they say that our early rocket systems were possibly divulged from alien technology and all that. Why were they so basic? You know, and then when you watch the Ancient Alien series, which I also like, but I have a lot of questions about. And you learn that possibly aliens were part of the Egyptian civilization. And then when you look at Egyptian relics, which we do, which I had the luxury or the possibility to here in L.A. at a museum, and it was very crude work. I mean, the Egyptians' work is beautiful, but it certainly isn't space age. And it certainly didn't look, you know, up close and in person. And it certainly didn't look otherworldly. So, you know, how did, you know, how is our technology so behind if we're sharing alien technology? Do they not help us? They just say, okay, here's the technology. We're not going to assist you with it. We're going to have you figure it out, you know, the best you can. But we're going to say, here it is, but we're not going to help you with it. Or do they help us with it? I mean, why can't we figure out, you know, Millennium Falcons and Star Wars type spaceships? Why can't we do that if we're sharing the technology?
Well, are they giving it to us or are we stealing it from these crash sites?
Maybe we're holding them hostage. That I don't know. What do you think, Ray?
I think that we do have live aliens, and we are not returning them. And there's a guy that's a witness with the program. He's deceased now. He was a Marine captain and engineer, Bill Uhouse. There's plenty of videos of him on YouTube. He claims he worked with an extraterrestrial, and my belief is we pretty much already are in the Star Trek era. We have things that you couldn't even imagine. And the reason it hasn't been brought out is because there isn't really a need to. You know, if you have a tactical advantage over every other army in the world, you're not going to disclose that advantage unless you really need to. In other words, you're not going to use it. You're not going to tip your hands and, unless you're forced to do that in a situation, you know, where you need to win.
Right.
And we haven't been in that situation since we dropped the nuclear weapon.
Right. Now, a few more quick questions. Let me see if I can get that out. A little tongue-tied there. With the few minutes we have left, do aliens work with us or against us, Ray? Are they our friends or are they our enemies? Are they trying to control us?
I think there's no question that they're our friends. If they were our enemies, they could have destroyed us a long time ago. And that's pretty much the way all of the witnesses in the program see it. They've been guiding us, helping us since the beginning. If you look back at, you know, UFO sightings through history,
right.
There was supposedly one during a war with Alexander the Great where a UFO swooped down and scared off all of his war elephants and stories like that. They've been watching us for a long time. That's my feeling.
I agree with you.
I believe that it's possible that humans were even created by aliens as a genetic experiment.
Wow.
You know, that's definitely speculation, but I believe it's possible.
Hey, great thought to leave us with. Melissa, do you have any final questions for our friend here, Mr. Ray Weir?
We've gone over so much.
I've got papers, Ray. You wouldn't believe it. I have scribbling notes like a madman, but I really appreciate your time. What do you have? You have another one, something closing for Ray?
You know,
Ray?
I'm just fascinated by the whole thing, but ask you this, Ray. Where can we go from here? How can we use these alien friendships? How can we use this technology? What do we have to gain and where do we have to go before, obviously, the remote viewers have us all dying in the kill shot?
Well, Dr. Greer's main focus is, you know, he's always been to the into the UFO and ET subject, but he has enough witnesses from the military that have talked to him about these advanced energy systems and zero-point energy. And it's his belief that, you know, we have to convert to these new systems and quit burning oil and gas and coal, or we're going to destroy this planet and we're going to have no choice but to leave. And his scientists and his personal belief is that we have to do this within the next 50 years. He doesn't believe we have 50 more years of burning carbon and contributing to greenhouse gases and all of that. He thinks it's a very dire situation. And that's his main goal. And actually, all the profits from the film Sirius are going to an energy lab where he's going to try to develop these new forms of energy. And let me tell you, he's got enough scientists that worked in the military and claim that they know what they're doing that he's probably going to do it.
Right. Well, Ray, you know what? I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for joining us today. We had an amazing discussion. Thank you, Melissa, for joining us. I mean, joining me in this quest to find out more information about aliens and are we here alone and the CIA. This is certainly all my kind of stuff, and I really like it. So thank you for joining me here. Ray,
thanks for having me. I had a blast, and if you ever want to do it again, I'm available. We can do it anytime.
Amen. I think there's definitely going to be a part two of this.
Well, I appreciate that, and we'll keep you know, we'll keep an ear out for you, Ray, and any information you're ready to disclose. But that wraps it up. So we're gonna take it out with David Bowie. So, of course, how could we do an alien show without Space Oddity? So, Ray, I wish you luck, man, and I will be, of course, in communication with you soon, and I'm going to study all the stuff you shared today, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.